Nobody who watches the NFL can fail to see that many head coaches are stars. The camera frequently finds them, though they don't have much job security. While they are employed, they're paid more than all but the most expensive players. In some quarters, the most successful of them are regarded as geniuses. For Coaching Confidential, subtitled Inside the Fraternity of NFL Coaches, Gary Myers interviewed some of the most admired current and former NFL coaches, and he joins me from WWNO in New Orleans. Gary, welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you very much, Bill. It's nice to talk to you.
Why did you begin your book with the story of the suspension of Sean Payton, the head coach of the New Orleans Saints?
Being that my background is the newspaper business and being able to sense what a good story is and what might catch the reader's attention. Once all this Bountygate stuff became, you know, huge news, as they say in the newspaper business, you know, sweetheart, get me a rewrite. And I had to rewrite that chapter. But the funniest part of this story for me is late March, I was going up to the NFL office, and I've known Roger Goodell for 30 years, and we try to have lunch once a year. I was waiting in the sixth floor reception area of the NFL offices on Park Avenue in Manhattan. I'm there for about 5 minutes, and a guy walks past as I'm looking down. He goes, "Hey, Gary, what's going on?" I looked up. It was Sean Payton. He was taking a bathroom break from the meeting that he was having with Goodell, in which he was pleading his case not to be suspended. And he goes back into the office, and then 2 days later, Goodell announced that Payton was being suspended for the entire 2012 season.
Obviously, all these coaches have their individual strengths, but based on what you learned as you were researching the book, did you come away with a sense of what the most essential qualities are for a successful NFL head coach?
Well, I think, you know, personal relationships. A guy like Tom Coughlin nearly lost his job following the 2006 season because he was treating his players as nameless, faceless guys in helmets and uniforms. And the Giants ownership after 2006 went to Coughlin and said, "We know what kind of man you are. We see how you are around your family. We see how you are around us. We need the players to see more of that because the locker room is in turmoil, and a lot of that is because of the way you treat them." He reinvented himself in his late 50s, and he won the Super Bowl that year, and he won it again last year. And I think it really accentuates that. The days of a Tom Landry being able to separate himself from his players and still being able to win, those days are long gone.
Joe Gibbs, who coached Washington, said of the profession, "You live in fear of the late-night phone calls," but I assume every coach would say that's true.
Oh, for sure. And as one coach, I believe it was Brian Billick, had told me when Ray Lewis, who's playing in the Super Bowl this weekend, had gotten arrested for that incident that happened in Atlanta.
Well, an incident. It was a double murder.
That's a much better way of describing it. I'm sorry. But when the phone rings, Bilk is saying, "Okay, I know my children are at home." The coaches know when the phone rings at the odd hours that it can never be good news. And you know what? As a parent, I always tell my kids, and I set curfews and everything, that nothing good ever happens after midnight. And I think these coaches feel the same way about their players. They'd like them all to be in bed at 11 o'clock at night, but these are grown men and you can't really control them that way.
Some NFL coaches have regularly slept in their offices, even if they lived 20 minutes away. Regarding how many hours head coaches put in, New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft told you, "It's a sick life. I'm not sure if I had a daughter, I would want her to marry a head football coach." But aren't the expectations of the owners partly responsible for creating that sick life?
You know, Bill, there's no question about that. It's interesting, though, isn't it? You have the president saying if he had a son, he wouldn't want him to play football, and an NFL owner saying if he had a daughter, he wouldn't want her to marry a head coach. Mm-hmm. So this is a tough business. But these coaches are motivated by a fear of failure. Even though they're getting paid an extraordinary amount of money and can probably live off that, even if they got fired and never got another head coaching job, they're so driven and so competitive, sometimes they don't know when they've reached a point of diminishing returns. You know, Dick Vermeil is the classic case of that, and I wrote a whole chapter about burnout. Now, he's the poster boy for burnout. Not that he's proud of it, but he doesn't run away from it. I think in a lot of cases, these coaches are their own worst enemy.
Tell us a little bit about the two head coaches preparing their teams for this weekend's Super Bowl.
Very interesting guys. I've known Jim Harbaugh since 1987, which is when the Bears made him their first-round draft pick, and I always enjoyed writing about him and talking to him as a player. He doesn't have a lot of tolerance for stupid questions, which unfortunately in a Super Bowl setting you're going to get. Jim is such a smart guy that to answer questions over and over again, it just kind of it wears him down. He's already a great coach, but he is the next real superstar. What Harbaugh has done in San Francisco in 2 years is truly amazing, and he's one of these rare quarterbacks who go on to be NFL head coaches, and certainly even rarer is a former NFL quarterback who wins the Super Bowl, which he has a chance to do. His brother John is just as competitive as Jim, and all you have to do is watch him on the sidelines during a game and to see how demonstrative they are. He has a much different background because he was a special teams coach for a lot of years with the Eagles and then was a defensive back coach. If you were going to ask me which of these two coaches could have more of an impact on Sunday's game, I would say Jim, because Jim's the offensive play caller and he'll be much more in control of what happens out on the field.
Gary Myers is the author of Coaching Confidential, Inside the Fraternity of NFL Coaches. The book is published by Crown, and the author joined me from WWNO in New Orleans. Gary, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Bill, thank you very much for having me.